Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, lots of good people involved, and the host and founder and guiding light of this program is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she is indeed a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick this hour off now with Carol Marks in conversation with Dr. Eben Alexander. He's the author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Proof of Heaven, and has been an academic neurosurgeon for the last 25 years, including 15 years at Brigham and Women's and Harvard Medical School in Boston. He's going to talk to Carol about his new audio program titled Seeking Heaven, Sound Journeys into the Beyond, published by Simon & Schuster Audio.
Let's talk about a little bit of your knowledge as a neurosurgeon about the parts of the brain and its functions. What did you formerly believe about the brain, consciousness, and near-death experiences, and what do you believe now?
Well, before my coma, I worshipped the conventional science, you know, what we call reductive materialism. That's kind of a broad description of our current science, which says basically if you can understand everything about electrons, protons, quarks, neutrons, atoms, molecules, cells of the brain, and the material realm, that you can explain all that is about everything. And, you know, I worshipped that kind of simplistic thinking. And my coma showed me very clearly that that does not work at all. And the coma showed me that because 5 years ago, I went deep into coma very rapidly, within hours, with a rare and aggressive, primitive, and absolutely should have killed me, bacterial meningitis. I spent 7 days in coma on a ventilator. At the beginning of that week, I was down to about a 10% chance of survival. By the end of that week, having not responded to the three powerful intravenous antibiotics, I was down to about a 2% chance of survival and no chance of recovery. And it was after that that I started coming back. Well, in fact, my brain was so wrecked by that disease, and specifically my neocortex, the outer surface of the brain, the part that makes us human, the part that is absolutely necessary for any kind of rich, detailed conscious awareness and experience, according to modern neuroscience. And that is where the crux of the problem lay, because after my coma, my brain had been so wrecked that, in fact, all my memories of life before as Eben Alexander, before my coma, and all my knowledge of humans on Earth, all my religious thinking, all my scientific knowing from 20 years plus experience in neurosurgery, all that was wiped out.
I mean, your coming back was a miracle. Nobody could explain what happened. But what do you think motivated you to come back and tell your story?
Well, I know the reason I came back, and that has to do, as I describe in the book, with even though I was amnesic for my life before coma, which I think allowed for a very deep and extraordinary journey, it was also important that I be amnesic during that coma journey for my life before coma, because some of the deepest clues about the reality of it had to be discovered. In other words, if I had remembered everything about my life and had encountered my father, who had passed over 4 years earlier, which is the soul that I would most like to have seen during that journey, if all that had happened, I would not have been able to see the reality of it. And I explain all that Proof of Heaven, how that worked out, that I had to have that particular amnesia. But in fact, that is at the core of my understanding of this, because the scientific part of me, the neuroscientist who says brain creates consciousness, which is what I thought before my coma, would have told you that the next step beyond that earthworm's eye view that I describe in the book, that very coarse, primitive, simplistic consciousness, the next step should have been a stage of nothingness. And yet what happened next was the blinders coming off, my awareness to a much higher level of reality and existence. And that's what I came back with after the coma, was all of that. And the reason I did come back is because of the connection that I felt to my son, Bond, the 10-year-old son who was there in the ICU room that seventh day of coma. and who had just overheard news about the fact the doctors were recommending stopping the antibiotics and giving up, and he came running in, and it was his pleading with me to get better, that I was going to be okay, that reached across all those dimensions, and I'm certain I did not see him with my eyes or hear him with my ears when he was there pleading with me, but I felt it and remembered across all those dimensions, and even though I didn't remember him, I had no idea who this was, there was that strong sense of connection with another soul. That's what forced me to come back, with that sense of love and responsibility to be there for that other soul. And that's why I came back.
And, you know, it's so moving. Now, besides writing your book to tell people about your experiences and that, you know, our consciousness is not in our brain, you vowed that you were going to focus your scientific endeavors from then on into further investigating the nature of consciousness. And that has led you to research auditory enhancement of the whole meditation experience. So how can that produce deep meditation? And as you say in introducing your tapes, that deep meditation is so important. So what is it?
Well, my whole journey of kind of awakening after my coma, which is ongoing, which I'm certain I will continue for the rest of my life, was one of getting deeper and deeper into the mystery of consciousness. And since consciousness is the only thing any one of us truly knows exists, and in fact, you know, consciousness is absolutely at the core of all. And that's why it's so crucial to get beyond this little myth, this kind of simplified thinking, the kindergarten level thinking of conventional science. The consciousness is just an epiphenomenon, well, you know, maybe an illusion of the construct of the physical brain. That is not the truth of it at all, and that, I think, is the deeper reality. And I came to realize that going deep into consciousness is a way of getting to these deeper truths. A lot of the truth that I was able to see deep in my coma journey, I can get back into those realms readily using these kind of tools that I developed with sacred acoustics. I mean, sacred acoustics are really the brilliant minds behind it, Kevin Kosky and Karen Newell. But I work with them in some of the research and development to develop these tools. I briefly get into it towards the end of the book, Proof of Heaven, where I talk about the work of Robert Monroe, how he had found it, certain sound patterns, specifically what are called binaural beats, enable transcendental conscious states. For Robert Monroe, those states involved out-of-body experiences that he wrote about in three books. And so I got deeply into every bit of that and then started working with sacred acoustics. And they use not only binaural beats but other manipulations of sound in a way that, and it's the sound patterns that are interacting with, in my view, interacting with the nucleus in the lower brainstem of humans. And it turns out that that nucleus evolved about 200 million years ago, at the time when modern neuroscience would tell you consciousness emerged in the animal kingdom, in vertebrates. And in fact, it's by manipulating that very primitive and ancient circuit that one also entrains brainwaves. That is near the ignition system of what's called the reticular activating formation in the lower brainstem. Modern neuroscience, in its simplistic views of consciousness, says that formation is part of the timing mechanism of consciousness. And it's by manipulating that I believe we synchronize certain electrochemical activity in the neocortex, and by taking it offline, essentially duplicating in a fashion what my severe bacterial meningitis did, that's what allows these deep transcendental conscious states to emerge.
Now, in your tapes, you know, what I found so interesting were some of the different sounds, tinkling sounds, space sounds, nature sounds, heartbeat sounds. Were those hard to come up with? Was that really the most challenging part?
No, and we're very careful about how we use those, because, in fact, the real magic is something that's underlying all that. The real magic is in the tones that have to do with an ongoing manipulation of the differential frequencies to the two ears. And that is what is affecting that lower brainstem circuit and allowing conscious awareness to be set free. And again, this is a process of allowing it to happen and realize that the little voice in our head, that little kind of voice of anxiety and fear, the ego, the self-beliefs, is not our consciousness. And that, of course, is very confusing. As a neuroscientist before my coma, I would have probably been tempted to tell you that little voice in our head is the key part of consciousness. But I realize now that that little voice is just a spectator. It's actually more of a parlor trick. It is, the voice in our head is the result of a small region in the brain called Broca's area that produces words and language. And then there's a receptive area called Wernicke's area. They're very small regions of the brain, and in fact, they're not even the decision maker. I point that out in Proof of Heaven. The experiments of Benjamin Leibitz 40 years ago showed that that little voice is informed of the decision. And a lot of people tell me, well, I can't meditate. I've got a busy mind, monkey mind, or whatever they call it. And that is specifically what sacred acoustics and these sound meditations is designed to overcome, is that little monkey mind, that little voice in the head. Because in meditation, our goal is to quiet that little voice and then to go deeper into our consciousness as the observer, and we end up finding that there is far richer knowing at deeper levels. And, of course, this is something that's been told to us by deep meditators, Tibetan monks, people who practice transcendental meditation for millennia. And the truth is they're right on the money. This is the way to get there, and that's why Sacred Acoustics and I all put up Seeking Heaven, is to bring these tools out for everyone to use to get into these deep transcendental states of awareness.
Dr. Eben Alexander, in conversation with Carol Marks, his book is called Proof of Heaven, and he has a follow-up audio program, Seeking Heaven, Sound Journeys into the Beyond, published by Simon & Schuster Audio. For more information, go to ebenalexander.com. That's E-B-E-N. Alexander.com. Carol Marks returns with a conversation about people who are over 100 years old and are extraordinary when A Touch of Grey continues in a moment.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy and you feel fine. But that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Doesn't always cause symptoms, but it can be prevented. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of our program, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Gwen Weiss-Numeroff. She's a former advertising executive turned nutritionist and is the author of the book titled Extraordinary Centenarians in America, Their Secrets to Living a Long, Vibrant Life, published by AGO Publishing.
Now, you really started on your quest to meet some of the oldest long-living Americans and find out what contributes to their longevity.
I needed to meet the oldest, and at first it wasn't so much the most extraordinary. It was the oldest people in this country, but my criteria was very simple then, 100 years old, give or take a few years, and had a mental capacity to answer questions based on their genetics and lifestyle habits and hear their incredible journey through their lives of 100 years, a whole century. But then when I started looking for them, I came across these incredible, incredible people that were doing remarkable things in their 80s, 90s, 100s. So my criteria actually shifted upwards, that, yes, give or take a few years, less or more than 100, but actually doing remarkable things, not just for their age, just in general, to inspire people even more that there's so much more to be done in life and how to stay healthy and how do they stay healthy and just keeping their lives joyous. So that's what catapulted me on this journey, this two-year journey, to find these remarkable people so that to give myself hope as well as others, that you don't have to fear aging. And it's, not everyone is going to have a disease. And there are people out there that are somehow, preventing these things from happening somehow. And I needed to find out what those secrets were.
Now, Gwen, you were concerned about genetics because of your family's history. What role did you find genetics played in the health of the 30 people you interviewed?
Well, fortunately, it didn't play as much of a role than I suspected, and I think many other people do or did, maybe not so much after reading the book. I can tell you, I asked every centenarian what the age and causes of death of their parents and their siblings, more relative were their siblings because it's, you know, they're the same generation from the same womb. I mean, their parents were from a completely different generation. But what I found was 80% of them that had siblings, and most of them did, had siblings that passed away in their 60s, at least one that passed away in their 60s or younger, which obviously is not great longevity. So what that demonstrates is that, yes, genetics played a role, maybe 30%, but what it demonstrates is that the genetics didn't necessarily save them or doom them, that we're not necessarily doomed or saved by our genetics, and that you can turn your genetic markers on and off based on many different lifestyle factors. And that's what these centenarians proved, whereas they had heart disease and cancer and various diseases like myself in my family running through their families, and they were able to avoid them.
And I think one of the important things that the centenarians you interviewed had in common was they all had a strong sense of purpose and making a difference in their family lives, the community, or the world. And you interviewed, well, there were so many that were inspiring. I wish we could talk about all of them, but one of them was 101-year-old Ruth Gruby, I think that's how you pronounce the name, who was a photojournalist and author. And she was such a remarkable humanitarian, and she helped so many beleaguered Jews around the world. It was really mind-boggling what she did.
Oh, absolutely. I was awe-inspired by this woman, and I remember going up in the elevator to her apartment thinking about just how many accomplishments and still what she was, from what I had heard when I researched her, what she was still doing, saving Jews in Ethiopia by helping them craft pillows and do needlepoint so that they can sell them, so they can get out of there. She's still working on missions to do these things. Her whole life was based on helping others, and it definitely is a commonality amongst all of them, is that they look outward. They're do-gooders, and do-gooders definitely, and I have this in the book as well, research that backs it up, that it increases the quality and quantity chemically in your brain as well, increases the quality of your life by doing good for others. And they all had that in common. I don't think that was a coincidence.
And it was amazing to me, so many of them were continuing to work if they had a passion for what they do. There was 101-year-old lady, Abby Hamilton, who was the first, I guess, a major real estate woman in the United States to have a huge, huge business, and she's still working.
Yes, and still and unbelievable. I actually called recently. I called to see how she liked, actually, the book. I had sent her the book, and I hadn't heard from her, and a lot of times I speak with her secretary who's worked for her for 40 or 50 years, Betty Turner. And they're just so adorable. They're so Southern. I just absolutely adore them. And Betty called me back, and she said the reason why Abby didn't get back to you was because she had a gallbladder attack. When she was visiting, she was at a fundraiser, and it was actually in honor of her. And Tony Orlando, remember Tony Orlando?
Oh, yes, the singer.
That is her favorite performer, Tie a Yellow Ribbon from the Old Oak Tree. That was her favorite song. She went to the fundraiser, and she had an attack and collapsed. Bottom line is she was in the hospital, and Tony Orlando visited her in the hospital and sang the song to her.
Oh, how nice.
And she's perfectly fine, knock wood. She is so fine. She's so resilient, this woman. And she's already, getting back to herself at 101 after surgery. And it's just incredible, incredible. And she's still running her company, which is, I think, the 11th largest realty company in the country.
That is really something. Now, the centenarians you interviewed for the book had occupations ranging from a barber to a well-known author. What did they have in common when it came to their weight and being active and possessing a good sense of humor?
Well, well, for one, weight. None of them, I could say none of them were obese. All of them maintained, whether it was a barber, it didn't depend on gender or income or anything. And there was really, like, it was such a slice of life of all different types of people in this country. And they still all maintained an optimal or moderate weight, meaning that some of them were slightly overweight, like 10 to, I'd say, 30 pounds. And it wasn't always in their life, maybe one or two. But none of them were obese, and they were able to control it. And they ate moderate portions. That's what they had in common. They ate really all different types of things. They never even really thought about their diet or nutrition. But they always, growing up through the Great Depression, they ate very moderately. They never ate in excess. And vegetables were always a staple on their plate. And the sizes of the portions were very different. Like a size of meat, they ate such a moderate portion of meat. It was like the size of the palm of your hand, which is supposed to be. And ours is maybe four times that size. Maybe that's like 3 ounces. So the culture of eating was very different for them based on their formative years, you know, growing up through the Great Depression. It was just very different. And they maintained it. So they were able to maintain a very optimal weight. They all had a great sense of humor, every one of them, even those that had such a difficult life, and some of them really, really did. They just triumph over challenge. They embrace it. They move on, and they seek joy. And they were just so warm and witty and just so accessible and generous with their time. They literally changed my life.
That's Gwen Weiss-Numeroff in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Extraordinary Centenarians in America, Their Secrets to Living a Long, Vibrant Life. It's published by AGO Publishing. If you'd like more information, go to the website livingvibrantlyto100.com, 100 of the numbers, livingvibrantlyto100.com. Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine will be joining us next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined this time each week by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who's also vice president and executive editor of the trade publication Talkers that I just told you about a few minutes ago regarding Talkers Radio. Well, Talkers is the trade publication of the talk radio industry. And, Kevin, we're coming up on the end of the year. Christmas has passed, New Year's is at hand, and I'm sure that you have swirling around in your mind what the biggest topics of conversation on news talk stations, such as the one we're being listened to on now, this past year of 2013. What were some of the biggest stories? What was the biggest story?
Well, I think, Michael, I think even our listeners could get this one without even the expertise that we have about the industry. It was the rollout of Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, clearly the most talked about story of the year.
And as we head into the new year, it's going to probably be one of the biggest stories of the beginning of the new year.
Yeah, and it has the unusual qualities of being a slowly developing news issue. The rollout of Obamacare is something that's happening over time, and that's adding to its longevity, and then certainly, as you say, will push it into 2014.
What are some of the other big stories?
The Benghazi attack investigation was a big one as well. If you remember back in the summer, it was real big, was the IRS being accused of targeting conservative groups and tax issues. The debt ceiling, the government shut down the sequestration back from late winter of last year. The Boston Marathon marathon bombing, obviously a huge topic, and plus the Republican strategy for the next two elections in 14 and 16 was a big topic throughout the year.
Now, if you were to look at Talkers Magazine and see the most talked about stories on News Talk Radio, and then you were to look at, say, your daily newspaper or Time Magazine, the biggest news stories, although there is a tremendous overlap, they are not always the same. In other words, radio sometimes has different stories.
For very good reason. Some stories are big news, but they just don't engender themselves to being talk topics. There isn't enough controversy about them. They simply are an event that happened. And the best talk radio stories are the ones that have nuances and can have different opinions. People can have different opinions and bring them into the debate. And that's what works as a news talk radio story.
And wouldn't you think that in some cases, talk radio makes some stories its own? For example, you mentioned the Benghazi investigation.
Yeah.
I would think that to the talk radio listener, the Benghazi story was a much bigger story than to the newspaper reader or the TV watcher, unless you're talking about the cable news talk TV stations.
Absolutely. The average citizen probably didn't know much about Benghazi or the attack other than kind of faintly remembering it as a story in which, unfortunately, people died.
And those are the most important, I think, to our industry, are the stories that talk radio discusses from its own angles and the ones that it makes its own.
Mm-hmm.
And, makes it have a value beyond just being another source of news.
That's very true.
It's all interesting. Listen, we wish you and yours a happy new year and hope that 2014, from all of us at Talkers Magazine, is a good year for our friends around the country and our readers and people in the industry and, of course, to the listeners of A Touch of Gray in the real world outside of behind-the-scenes media business. Kevin Casey, our senior correspondent, he's also vice president and executive editor of Talkers. You can find out the entire list of the biggest stories, the biggest people, the biggest events of the year on talk radio, and then some, by going to talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare.
Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're going to be joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman will be interviewing Carolyn Ray. She's a stand-up comedian and actress who was the original host of the reality TV show The Biggest Loser. She was also the host of her own syndicated talk show, The Carolyn Ray Show. She's going to talk about overactive bladder.
How does one go from bikini-clad extra in Meatballs 3 to stand-up comedy?
Well, first of all, the only reason I was a bikini-clad extra is because, you know, my mother is the source of all funniness, and they originally offered me the part of the topless water skier, and my mother said, it's such a shame she can't water ski. We were all bikini-clad, but you know who Meatballs 3 was starring is McDreamy from Grey's Anatomy was the star, Patrick Dempsey.
Wow.
I know.
Now, you've done acting, you've done stand-up. I've always been a fan of your stand-up. Do you prefer acting or stand-up?
You know what? I think I prefer stand-up at this point. I love acting, but there's a lot of sitting around and waiting. And I just like to, I don't know, I was always the one who wanted to get up and blab. So I like that. I think for me the necessity is to connect with an audience more than, it's not like I love jokes and I love telling them, but I love having that little human experience that for an hour we're like transported to a different place and we all forget stuff and then, you know, we have a good laugh together. That's the part that I like.
It's terrific. Do you find it more difficult for a woman in stand-up?
You know, I think probably initially, it's funny because earlier when we were off air we were talking about how women can be self-deprecating. I think it's that you want to strip yourself down as, not physically or literally, but you just want to be funny more than being judged on your physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, I've always had this theory that when you get on stage as a comedian, if you're a female, before you really know what you're doing, it's a terrible thing, but, like, the men don't have confidence that you're going to be funny, and most of the women don't.
Yeah.
And when a man gets on stage, everybody thinks he's going to be funny.
Yeah.
So you sort of have that. But there are, I know so many great female comedians. They, you know, got to say, they make me laugh more than the men do, so.
Yeah, I can get into it. I've made some women laugh, but it's been at an inappropriate time, so I don't. you just brought up bad
that's
memories.
That's the best. That's why I'm sure you're reluctant to talk about overactive bladder, which is why I was chatting with you. But that's one of the reasons. It's like when I first became a comedian, this really famous guy in the industry who runs a giant festival. He's a very influential guy. And I was a friend of his, and I was moving to New York, and he said, well, my only advice for you as a comedian is don't talk about being a woman. And then, you know, it's, you know when someone says don't look in the closet and all you can do is look in the closet?
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So all I thought was, that's all I'm going to talk about. I mean, not to the point that it's alienating, but my life experience is what I'm sharing on stage, and hopefully other people are relating to it. So I am a woman. I'm going to talk about all these things so that you were not, like, imprisoned by some other person's perspective of what it's okay to talk about.
Yeah.
And that's why it's funny because, you know, these things happen. They said, would you ever be interested in doing awareness for an overactive bladder treatment? And at first I said, you know, it's not a condition that I particularly have, but let me look into it. And then 39 million people are suffering with this, and it's not normal. It's something that you have to really go talk to a doctor about. And I think it's just one of those things that, as much as I love Google, I think we, like, type in symptoms and think, oh, I got it covered. This is normal. It's not normal, and people suffer from it. And it's not necessarily, like, a life-altering disease, but it's a lifestyle-altering. And, you know, people aren't aware of it. So then I thought, well, I'm a blabbermouth. I'll go talk about this because maybe, you know, maybe somebody who watched me in Hollywood Squares has this, and then they think, okay, well, she's okay to talk about it. I can go talk to my doctor about it, which is the only reason you're supposed to have any, like, purpose as a celebrity, is that you can sort of bring awareness to things that people are shy about.
Which is terrific. What causes overactive bladder?
I don't know that. That is a, I know that part of it is age, and then part of it is just like a misdirect that your, you know, your brain and your bladder are not necessarily chatting at the same time about timing. So it's definitely still in the comedy realm. But this is what I really will suggest. There, so as a secondary treatment, Botox is being used, injected
really?
In the bladder. And not only will it make your forehead smooth, but and actually I have a friend who was in terrible pain and just had that, like, terrible look of pain, you know, and
yeah.
got the Botox treatment. And honestly, and it's a man, and he was so much happier. Of course, he's like, tell everyone, I feel so much better. So what you were asking, a sort of a medical question, if you go to Botox for OAB, you know, because everyone has an acronym. Even mm-hmm. even overactive bladder's got a cool texting thing. Botox for OAB.com, and then you put in your zip code. They will it'll show you a urogynecologist or a urologist in your neighborhood that you can not in your neighborhood necessarily, but in your zip code that you can go and discuss it with, and they will give you all the medical information. Although I am the daughter of a doctor and I like to think I know one, I'd like to play one on TV,
but
I don't
go.
Really have any medical knowledge.
You know, you mentioned that you knew a man who was talking to you about it, and although people don't talk about this much, the people I have talked to who've mentioned this have been women. Is this something that is an equal opportunity problem, or is this something that women get more than men?
I believe women get it more than men, but absolutely men suffer from this too.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say suffer, it's like, you know, you hear these stories, and there are women who haven't gone to the movies in 5 years.
Yeah.
They won't go to dinner. They won't go over and have, like, you know, stay at someone's house for the night because they're sort of, like, the priority of their life is being dictated by the fact that I have to be near, like, the restroom. I have to know all that. And it's one of those things, like, don't, like, women are too valuable. And men, we're like, especially mothers, I find, you know, they take care of their family and they forget to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
So yeah, all I'm saying is go to your doctor and just ask about it. Ask about it. It's not normal. It can be treated. It can be controlled. You can return to a much more regular lifestyle.
And it's great that you mentioned this, because wasn't there a study recently that talked about the fact that so many people just don't talk about it? They just kind of quietly adapt to it, but the way they adapt is not living a full life that they could.
Right, because they think, oh, this has just happened. It's age or whatever. It's not normal. It can be treated. And, yeah, I think it's some, I can't quite remember, but I think it's only 35% of people who go to the doctor, even when they want to be treated for this, are willing to talk about it.
Hmm. And so,
I mean, even hand gestures, if we just put up, like, one finger, I have the number one issue I want to discuss with you. We have to, like, think of anything. Like, just, it's terrible that we're so brave about a million things, but these little things keep us, like, completely imprisoned.
Well, you know, it's terrific that you feel able to do this, because I think there are a lot of people who would be, it would almost sound like a joke. Well, you know, here for overactive bladder is Caroline Ray. But in
right.
fact, that is the thing is, you have to take that sting and silliness out of it that we all have with poop and pee jokes.
Right.
And that's what it turns into.
Right. Yeah, it's funny because when they first asked me to do this, and I, of course, very maturely thought, I want to make people pee in their pants. That's part of my objective and
exactly.
goal as a comedian.
Yeah.
I just want it to be controlled in my own environment.
you want to be able to watch.
yeah, exactly. I want it to be, I want to take credit.
Well, you
anyway,
know
where are you guys? Where am I calling?
Oh, we're everywhere, but I'm in Western Massachusetts. You know, one last thing, and it's kind of interesting.
You're in Longmeadow.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about how this is everywhere. There was just recently a piece about an NFL player admitting that he peed in his pants before every game. So it's for everybody. And Caroline Ray, thanks so much for, you know, bringing this attention to it. November is Bladder Health Month, and hopefully we've gotten a few people to talk to their doctor.
Yeah, just go Botox or OAB, put your .com and put your zip code in and see who you can go talk to. I'm telling you, there's great doctors out there who want to help.
Caroline Ray in conversation with Steve Wiseman. If you'd like more information, go to BotoxForOAB.com. It's BotoxForOAB.com. I'm Michael Harrison. Steve Wiseman returns for a few more words. He's going to talk about identity theft against seniors. That's next on A Touch of Gray. The talk show for grown-ups continues in a moment.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and as promised, here is our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, again. Steve Wiseman is a lawyer, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire, we call him. He's a prolific author. He's an expert on scams. As a matter of fact, he's written the Bible of the subject, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and he has a website that has the name scamicide.com. Check that out. Okay, this is very important. Steve is here to talk about identity theft in seniors. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, I've been talking a lot about identity theft, and certainly in my book, 50 Ways to Protect Your Identity in a Digital Age, and on scamicide.com, but there's a reason for that. You know, recently the Bureau of Justice Statistics just issued a report that found that identity theft costs Americans $1 billion more than just last year. Identity theft costs Americans $24.7 billion. Like I said, jumped $10 billion last year alone, and it's going to go up. Frankly, it costs Americans more than any other crime. It's more than burglary, more than theft of motor vehicles, any other kind of property theft. The totals for that, $14 billion a year. $24.7 billion for identity theft. And this is something that really cannot be overemphasized. And a lot of seniors and older people are becoming the victims of identity theft. And again, this is something that we really have to be wary of. And you have to protect, among other things, your Social Security number. Your Social Security number is the key to identity theft. If someone gets your Social Security number, they're going to be able to get at your credit report. They're going to be able to actually get your identity. There have been instances where someone steals an identity and uses it, commits crimes. Years later, you can get picked up on charges that these other people have done. Someone recently just won a $150,000 judgment because they were jailed for a few days while the authorities found out they really weren't the criminal. So protect that Social Security number. Also, protect your Medicare number. And believe it or not, Medicare still uses your Social Security number as your ID number. Every other federal agency has moved on. The driver's licenses around the state, they've moved on, but Medicare still does, and you've got to protect that. And you've got to also protect it and check your medical bills each month in case you become a victim of medical identity theft, where your identity is stolen, your health insurance is stolen, used by someone else. Believe it or not, in those instances, the medicine and the medical activities that are done for this person get into your files, corrupt it, and you can actually get a wrong transfusion because their files have been intermixed with yours. So this is something we just really need to make a high priority. You want to maybe get a credit freeze, protect that Social Security number. You can find on Scamicide a lot of other ways to do it, but make this the new year, the year you're going to protect your identity.
Thank you, Steve. Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. Some information about identity theft perpetrated against seniors. Certainly part of our mission is to protect seniors here on A Touch of Gray. And Steve Wiseman is the webmaster of Scamicide.com, and he's written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. Well, thank you, Steve, and thank you, Kevin Casey, and thank you to everybody involved in the program. Certainly Beverly Santinella, our producer on the front line, and the founder of the show, the host of the show, Carol Marks. We all wish you a very, very happy new year. May the best of everything happen for all of us in 2014. I'm Michael Harrison, your anchor, inviting you to join us again next weekend right here in the new year for another year and another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.